Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Boomer Esiason on a Patriots Monday, brought to you by McFarland Energy, the region's most dependable provider of home heating oil delivery and expert HVAC services at McFarlandEnergy.com, by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh, by Town Fair Tire for the best prices on tires. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. And Boomer is brought to you by your New England Kubota tractor dealers. Hi, Boomer.
Hey, good morning. I know it's not as good as a Monday morning as last week, but again, another competitive game by the Patriots. And you know, here's the lesson we should all learn. If there are no turnovers in a game, an NFL game is going to be tight no matter who's playing.
Well, very close. I mean, the problem for me is going to be, and you're the expert, so I want your response, but can you rely on just running the football all season long if you're the New England Patriots?
You know, going into the season, I think we talked about this, just exactly what they were going to be on offense, and it was going to be anything exciting, that it was going to be plodding and it was going to be close to the vest. They don't really have that many playmakers. You want to talk about Hunter Henry having a career day, that's one thing. But, you know, when you look on the other side and you see Metcalf and Smith and Jigba, you see, you know, top tier talent at wide receiver. And the Patriots really haven't had that player since Randy Moss. So, you know, that's how far back that goes. And that's part of the Patriots' problem. But if I were Gerard Mayo and I had what I had, and this would be the way that I would have to play. The question is, when is Drake May going to hit the field? He's not going to hit it this week. Maybe after this week he hits it. I don't know, but they just don't really have any game-breaking playmakers right now on offense.
Well, Boomer, I mean, we can clearly see that we don't have the DK Metcalf, the established wide receiver. The problem that I think the issue might be is we don't know what we have at wide receiver, because, you know, we can't push the ball downfield. We can't hit some of those 15-yard dig routes because everything is checkdowns and tight ends in the flat. So I think that's the biggest question is, because of the limitations of the quarterback, we don't know what we have at wide receiver.
Yeah, that could be part of the problem. But, I mean, in all practical reality in the NFL, I still think the Patriots are doing the right thing by, you know, putting Jacoby Brissett out there. He's trying to play a very clean game. It's not pretty. It's not exciting. You know, if he were throwing three interceptions in a game, I would sit here and tell you they got to get him off the field and I got to put the rookie out there because, you know, this doesn't make any sense to me. But if he's going to play a conservative, careful game and not turn the ball over and give his team a chance to win late in the game, then I got to tell you, if I am the coach, I'm the coaching staff, I'm sitting there on the sideline, this is our best way to win, and they almost did it 2 weeks in a row. That's the reality of what's going on here. So, well, again, short week, and there's no way Drake May is in this game unless Jacoby gets hurt, but it's just the way that they're playing.
Yeah, Boomer, I was going to bring up the fact that you look around the league, you see Bo Nix, you see Caleb Williams. They have two interceptions in their both games this week. So if you're Gerard Mayo, you see Jacoby Brissett out there not making mistakes, having the ability to escape with an offensive line that seems to keep breaking down. So for you, even 2 weeks from now, if Jacoby keeps playing the way that he is, why would you take the risk of putting out Drake?
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on what the situation is. If they lose this week to the Jets on a short week, then all of a sudden things may start to change. And internally they may start to change. And they may see more on the practice field from Drake May. And, you know, this is all valuable stuff for Drake right now. I know it's frustrating for fans not to see their top draft pick and to watch, you know, Caleb Williams last night or watch Bo Nix yesterday struggle in these games. It's frustrating for those fans too, because they're not winning their games. So again, there's just ways to handle quarterbacks a little bit differently. I always go back to the fact that Carson Palmer never played a game his rookie year for the Bengals and turned out to be really good. Patrick Mahomes played one game his rookie year. Aaron Rodgers barely played for 2.5 to 3 years. Same with Jordan Love. So every situation's a little bit different. But all I can say is that the Patriots are, I picked them to cover. I picked them possibly even win the game yesterday, just simply because of the way that they can play and the way that their defense can keep them in games. They're going to bend and bend and bend, and they're going to give up some big plays. But a lot of times they're going to keep the opposing team out of the end zone, which is, I think, the recipe that they're trying to invoke right now to win football games.
Speaking of the Jets, which quarterback gets credit for that win yesterday, Aaron Rodgers or Will Levis?
Will Levis, another bonehead play of the year, man. I mean, it's just I don't know what they're going to do with him down there, but his penchant for making mistakes in big spots, especially in the red zone and throwing the ball backwards, I mean, it's so bizarre. And somehow you got to sit these kids down and you got to tell them you can't do crap like that. So I thought that Aaron Rodgers actually played really well in the second half. This is the second game in a row where we've seen glimpses of the Aaron Rodgers that we saw in Green Bay when he was at the top of his game. So the team is good. They lost one of their best defensive linemen in Jermaine Johnson. It looks like he tore his Achilles yesterday, so that's a big loss for them. They still have the holdout for Hassan Reddick. I doubt he'll be back on a short week playing for the Jets. So the Jets have a myriad of problems, but they are a good team, and Aaron Rodgers looks like he's finally settling in.
Boomer, just about the Patriots, one more from yesterday. Is this the ground floor of the rebuild, even though it's year five after Tom? Like, is this, because the way I've watched this team this year has been better than I expected, but totally bereft of talent. And I see the way in which Jacoby Brissett is managing the game, no highlight reel plays, but it feels like they're just trying to get some space, some ability to build around that offensive line to get the offense going in a certain direction before putting Drake May in. And if that's the start of the rebuild, I guess I understand it.
Yeah, I listen, they had to take Bill Belichick out of the building and, you know, replacing all that he had done for all those years that he was there is not going to be easy. And it is bereft of talent, especially on offense, especially at wide receiver, and especially at offensive line. I mean, they're juggling linemen are leaving and taking off and not coming back. I mean, like, it's crazy what's going on up there. And I can imagine that every time they sit down and they start talking about their offensive line, their rookie, what Jacoby Brissett is trying to do, I mean, I'm sure it's so frustrating. But they also realize the reality is they don't want to put a rookie out there and get him hurt, especially if that rookie is just not ready yet. And only they know internally whether or not his communication skills, his huddle command, all of those things that are so important to the offense are ready to take over an offense that's built like this. So, yeah, you're right. It's a frustrating rebuild. There's no question about it. But I got to say, for 2 weeks now, they have been supremely competitive and more competitive than I thought they would be.
Is Brian Daboll still employed this morning?
He's going to be. He'll go through the season. This is going to be a tough one for him this morning. I mean, they did something that nobody's ever done in the NFL, and that is score 3 touchdowns in a game and give up 7 field goals and lose the game. And the kicking situation, everybody down here is like, how do you not have a backup kicker on the field? How do you not? I mean, like, how many teams actually have a backup kicker if the punter can't kick? So I remember back in Cincinnati, we had a punter. His name was Lee Johnson. And we had a kicker, Jim Breach. And if Jim couldn't make a kick, say, from 55 out, Lee Johnson would attempt that kick. So we had a backup kicker, so to speak, just in case something happened to Jim Breach. And that's usually the way it goes in the NFL. The fact that, you know, you have this practice squad elevation situation going on, and the Giants do have a rookie kicker on their practice squad, and they didn't elevate him knowing that there was a problem with Gano's groin going into the game, and then Gano gets hurt on the first kickoff by pulling his hamstring. You just can't make it up. I mean, it's the way the Giants have gone the last 3, 4, 5, 7 years, I think. And I think Brian Daboll is probably on thin ice for sure.
Boom, I think the reality of it is based on the way the Patriots play defense and run the football. And if you look at the landscape of the rest of the NFL, and I know it's only week 2 and I could be getting ahead of myself, but there isn't a team that really stands out and goes, okay, they're far superior than everybody else. You look at Cincinnati plays Kansas City close. The Patriots obviously beat Kansas City in week one.
Cowboys get blown out.
Cowboys get blown out.
Ravens 0-2.
Ravens lose. I think the reality is that you have a good football team, but your inability at the quarterback position to throw the football could be taking away from your chances to actually making a legitimate run rather than say, okay, this is a rebuild.
Yeah, it's interesting. Their last three drives of the game yesterday, I think they missed the field goal and then they punted twice. And that, to me, is the highlight of, or the low light of, the Patriot offense. Like, the game is right there. You take the lead 20-17. You know, in past years, Tom Brady would, you know, just eat up the clock. They'd end up kicking a field goal or scoring a touchdown late, and they'd win by 10. And yesterday, that just did not happen. I mean, they end up missing a field goal, of course, and then they punt on their last two series. And that's really the crux of the game, coming down to the fourth quarter. There's no turnovers. The game is tight. Which quarterback is going to make the play, or which offensive player is going to make a great catch or make a long run? And that just didn't happen for the Patriots. And Patriot fans for 20 years were used to those situational parts of the game to be made. All those plays were made. So it's a very close league. There's no question about it. I would also remind people that the first 4 weeks of the season, the first month of the season, we are still in preseason mode football-wise in terms of understanding who everybody is, what these teams are going to look like, and there's going to be a lot of inconsistency along the NFL through the first 4 or 5 games of the season.
The question of the week for Boomer Esiason is brought to you by McFarland Energy, the region's most dependable provider of home heating oil delivery and expert HVAC services at McFarlandEnergy.com. Boomer, reports over the weekend are that Tua wants to return to play, talking to specialists about how quickly he can come back. If you were he, would that be what you were doing?
Yeah, I would. I mean, you know, he's got a lot of money on the table. There's a lot to look at. There's a lot of nuance in the contracts. I know he wants to play. I know that I don't think the Dolphins are going to let him play initially. I think maybe a short-term stint on the IR, maybe 4 weeks, and then he comes back in 5 weeks. That's what I would expect. But I've said this a million times, and maybe Jermaine agrees with me. Even knowing what I know now, if I knew all of what I know now when I was playing back in the 80s and the 90s, would I have done it all over again? And my answer to that is unequivocally yes. I would have played. I loved every moment in the NFL. Every concussion that I took, every injury that I sustained were a part of a decision that I had to make to go out there on that field. And I loved it. I love all 14 years, losing, winning, being around the guys. Going out on that football field every Sunday was such a high that I don't think anything could ever replace that. So I understand where Tua is coming from. My own personal feeling is that if I could play, I wanted to play. So it's his decision. It's his family's decisions. The real question is, will the NFL allow him back on the field if he is not cleared by an independent neurologist? That's where it would get interesting.
How many is too many, though, Boomer? If you're a player and you have three diagnosed ones in your NFL career, and you're that young and you have two little kids and a wife, like, how many is too many concussions to say, wait a minute, I do need to walk away from this?
You know, Cordy, I think every player is different. Every family is different. I would say through high school, college, and pro, I would imagine somewhere between 7 and 10 concussions for me. Everyone was a little bit different. I took a really bad one in 1995, much like Tua. And Bruce Smith hit me under the chin, and I missed 4 games. And I think I was the first player in concussion protocol, believe it or not, back in 1995. Wow. So, and I came back to play 4 weeks later, and oddly enough, it was against the Bills, in which that was the team I took the concussion against. So, look, there are long-term effects. You know, we all live a certain way. We all do things in our life that are dangerous, and we all respect and understand the responsibility that comes along with a decision like this, and I'm sure Tua and his wife are talking about it. And again, it's not about always about the money, but this is a significant amount of money that if the league tells him he can't play, or an independent neurologist says he cannot play, then he'll get his injury guarantee money. If the league clears him and allows him to play, and then he decides not to play, then that's where it really gets sticky when it comes down to the guaranteed money, because it's almost like receiving a signing bonus and then retiring in the middle of that signing bonus proration, and then the team claws back the money that they gave you because you did not fulfill your end of the contract. So, like that, those are a big part of what he's got to think through and his family's got to think through, and what makes more sense, you know, his total health and well-being or the amount of money that he would be leaving on the table. So I think that's a big part of this whole thing, and I can't even put myself in that situation to make an accurate decision as to whether or not he should be playing.
Well, just last one for me. If you were to put yourself in a position of a new broadcaster who potentially got a phone call from an incredibly talented roster with a quarterback out with a concussion, would you respond with a yes if you were Tom Brady in the Miami Dolphins call?
Wow. I heard that. I heard that immediately after he was hurt. As a matter of fact, there was a meme going out there that had Tom Brady in that Miami uniform. And as a matter of fact, we all know that Stephen Ross tried to hire another Michigan man way back when, about 4 or 5 years ago, and it didn't happen. So that's a really good one. I don't think he would come out of the booth. And by the way, I thought his game yesterday, he was much better than his game previous. So he's already improved significantly. But, you know, that would be an interesting one. I don't think it's going to happen, though.
What about after Saturday? Can we determine that the best Manning family member is still to come to the NFL?
Yeah, how about that run, man? That was amazing. Oh. And I was texting with Archie Manning, of all people, who said that he misses me and Phil on Sunday's NFL Today. And I said, you know, Arch, I appreciate it. Great sentiment. I'm playing
golf.
I'm having a great time.
Those are your people.
Right. I'm having a guy. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, those people, you know, have lives too there, Greg. And you're not that far behind, by the way. So I said, I see you got another super stud coming up in the family. What a legacy that guy has left.
Unbelievable.
Right? Unbelievable.
Yes.
All right. Well, listen, short week. It's Pats, Jets. We appreciate you taking the time, as always, Boomer.
All righty, guys. I'll talk to you next week. Have a great one.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
It took overtime, but the Pats fell to the Seahawks in the home opener yesterday. 23-20 was the final at Gillette. Jacoby Brissett finished the day completing 15 of 27 passes for 149 yards and a touchdown. We still have Gerard Mayo to talk about that game this morning at 9 a.m. And if you're following along, 2 weeks in, and we have a winner in our survivor pool. Congrats to Chicken Nick. All of us on the morning show fell yesterday. Wiggy got out in week one, but yep. Week two took the rest of us.
Maybe we should double or nothing. Restart the suicide pool.
Oh, that'd
what
be
do you think?
Fun.
I love it.
All right. Maybe we'll restart it again.
We all get so just start clean week three. Right.
The second chance pool.
Yeah. We'll all do some kind of buyout on Chicken Nick or something like that. Who did Nick have this week, Sean?
He had the Chargers, who won going away.
Yeah. All right.
The big game that knocked most out was the Ravens falling 0-2 on the season with a 26-23 loss to the Raiders at home.
Only the second time in the last 15 years the team that lost the NFL kickoff game lost again in week two.
Wow. Very interesting. The Red Sox fell to the Yankees yesterday 5-2, losing that series 3-1. The guys are off today before taking on the Rays in Tampa Bay tomorrow. Alex Cora talked about where his team is at after a tough series, as featured on last night's Nissan Red Sox postgame show.
We're 4.5 games back, and it was a bad series because we lost 3 out of 4. We were in every game. You know, I was just talking to ref. You look at this week. We played Baltimore and the Yankees. We split up, right, or whatever it was. We lost 3 here, 1 at home, and every game was a close one. But that's not enough in this league. You know, you don't get wins by playing tough games. You get W's when you win games, and we didn't do it.
You deserve a car that thrills you, and Nissan's got an exciting full line that'll put goosebumps on your goosebumps. Experience the thrill for yourself. Shop your local Nissan store and NissanUSA.com today. That's what's trending. Here's Curtis with your weather.
All right, 60 degrees in Boston. Going to be a gorgeous day. Afternoon high, 81.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? an easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the Snacktime MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
We are at Gillette Stadium. It is a Patriots Monday, and the head coach of the New England Patriots, Gerard Mayo, will join us here in about a half an hour. You voted on his walk-up song. It's Biggie, and so we'll see if he is happy with that when he gets here. And Boomer touched on it briefly, but we'll be able to try, I guess, to get some clarity from Gerard when he is here. On the kind of the odd situation when it comes to a Okorafor, who just apparently decided he doesn't want to play football anymore, or just decided to leave, or was unhappy that he got benched. I don't know, but that's an odd situation there, I guess.
But a great real sort of point to how poor the Elliot Wolf offseason was in rectifying what was already an issue in the offensive line. That there, you know, you watch yesterday. I don't know if you guys saw the Bengals Chiefs game, but Orlando Brown Jr. was a big free agent acquisition by the Bengals. You have players up and down the rosters of these teams that are far better prepared to protect whoever is quarterback than what the Patriots brought in during the offseason. It's just, it remains beyond confusing as to why they allowed this issue to persist in the way that they have. I mean, it interrupts everything. If you don't have an offensive line, you can't do anything well.
Yeah.
And
well, in overtime, you got a procedure penalty that ends up ending that series. So I it's an issue. It is a big – and that may be the issue when Wiggy sits here every day and demands that Drake May play. That may be just the issue that nobody's going to tell you about is they have zero confidence in that line still.
But they look pretty good, though. I mean, they didn't look
that great yesterday.
30% of dropbacks hit.
You had, what, a .185 on the ground, right? So your offensive line is doing a good job on run play. You gave up, what, 3 sacks? And, there was a couple times where he had some time in there on a couple of those sacks where maybe get rid of the football. Like, there's always going to be a guy blows by a guy and completely gets beat. You know what I mean? Michael Owen, you just got beat one time, a guy just blows right by him. You're always going to get those. But they haven't consistently been doing that in the first couple of weeks of the season. Would you say that this offensive line has been a major issue so far through 2 weeks when we thought going into the season?
It's prevented any opportunity for a vertical passing game. And how many of those runs, which they did have, were with that jumbo set that Vilma kept talking about on the broadcast where you had 6 linemen plus a tight end? I mean, if you have those and you can run, that's great, but not exactly an offensive.
And I wouldn't think that the offensive line is the reason why you can't push the ball downfield. I think it's more the fact that they don't have confidence in Jacoby Brissett.
Well, the success of the run game, at least in when it came to Gibson, was more on, from my perspective, on the player than it was on the line. I mean,
is this the road we're going to go down? They have a .185 on the ground. Now it's all the player?
But another player stood up for, and we talked about Ramondre Stevenson last week when it was like you can't put it all on him. Another player stepped up and impressed.
No, but I'm saying your offensive line has to create holes and open up holes for your back to be able to, you know, get through. There's going to be times where, a guy makes a guy miss in the backfield. But let's not all of a sudden go, and the reason why they had 185 rushing the football is because the running backs were able to make guys miss and there was nothing
to do. So you don't want to give any credit to them?
No, I give them credit, but the credit comes from the O-line, right?
Okay, so you have no problem whatsoever with the line.
I haven't. Through 2 weeks of the season, going into the season, we had major concerns. Through the first 2 weeks, I don't think your O-line has been an issue.
This is Keith in the truck. Keith, good morning.
Good morning, everybody. So, like, a lot of the running plays, they're going with a heavy set. And then I see the biggest issue is mostly, obviously, on their pass plays. And you see, I mean, Owenu was horrible yesterday. Mafi absolutely ate him alive. I just think it's mostly the tackles that are the issue. And you look at Jacoby, he looks like he's making plays off off platform almost every single time. He never looks comfortable in the pocket, and I don't think that's going to change if you bring in Drake May. Just my opinion. I just think they made a mistake in the offseason without getting another a legit tackle.
Yeah. According to Andrew Callahan of the Herald, Jacoby Brissett was hit on 30% of dropbacks and pressured on half. So, yes, the running game.
And he did, we talked about this earlier, did a much better job this week when it came to scrambling and throwing on the run. Certainly that's a plus for Jacoby Brissett.
And there, if there's one play that one of the players who had a great game wants to have back, it's the drop by Hunter Henry on that play where Jacoby Brissett somehow felt pressure behind him, evaded a rush, stepped up, and threw that pass at the out route that was on the sideline that Hunter Henry immediately got up and, you know, touched his chest and said, my bad. But without Hunter Henry, this passing game doesn't even exist. I mean, you've been right wings. I mean, where's Pop Douglas? Where's Jalen Polk? Where are these guys that we thought, you know, Osborne, I guess, I don't know, whatever. He had one good catch. But it's going to be an issue on Thursday night. I don't believe the Patriots are going to hold Aaron Rodgers to under 21 points. Do you guys?
I don't think so. But this defense is good enough to do that. Right, when you look at this defense, they've shown through the first 2 weeks that they're good enough to do that. I mean, yeah, they give up a blown touchdown play to DK Metcalf, but that's something I look at. They're going to fix that. If you look at this defense as a whole, they've been pretty solid. And I'm not saying they're going to hold the Jets and Aaron Rodgers to, you know, under 20-21, but I wouldn't it wouldn't shock me if they did. It would shock me if the Patriots scored more than 24 on offense.
Yeah, I what's the line for that? I don't even know. My guess is probably, what, 5?
Jets are favored by 6.5.
Oof. Yeah, right. Take the Pats. But, yeah, I don't understand how Okafor just leaves. That's not great. I'm sure it has to do with the benching. It's just so bizarre. Is that weird. The modern athlete now?
I think
it's
so.
I just want to go home.
That is weird.
I'm going to take everything out of my locker, and I'm considering retiring now. Yeah. I mean, how about giving it the old college try? We can ask Gerard Mayo about it, and he will be, I'm sure, forthcoming on it. This is Pauly from Dedham. Hey, Pauly.
Hey, guys. They're playing very hard. That was a tough loss. You almost would rather get blown out than lose like that because they are battling hard. I haven't seen a Patriots team play this hard in quite some time. They're playing for Mayo, and that's a real good thing. That was a heartbreaking loss there. But the difference in the game was the offensive line playing both sides of the ball. They were able to protect Geno Smith, who has a little bit more maneuverability than Jacoby Brissett. But they were able to protect him much better than the Patriots, especially as they were able to protect Brissett. Especially as the game wore on, they were a good run blocking unit, the Patriots. But pass protection, as the game wore on, they started rolling up coverages to cut off Hunter Henry when they made the adjustment when they knew they were going to him. They were going for that short, you know, underneath stuff where the defense was more sitting back. It was more sit and catch. They started rolling up the coverages, and it was game over because that offensive line couldn't hold them for more than 2, maybe 3 seconds if you were lucky. And then it was like a jailbreak on every single play. And, you know, this is what we're looking at right now. They just could not. Their passing attack was rendered ineffective by the end of the game. They just could do nothing at all.
All right. See, I'm only a fan who doesn't know much, Greg. But I would think that
you know more than anybody.
Yep. I would think that the best way to help your offensive line would be moving the pocket, whether that's sprint, having your quarterback on a sprint out, whether that's naked and bootleg. Shimesy, you know, he's probably can get into the weeds as far as the PFF naked and bootlegs, moving the quarterback outside of the pocket. Generally, that's a great way to help your offensive line because now it keeps the defense guessing. And generally, you're able to do that with a quarterback that might have a little bit more maneuverability. So if your offensive line is struggling and they don't do well against five-step drops, then maybe what you say is, okay, we'll get him more naked and bootleg and play actions. We'll move the quarterback so the O-line, the D-line doesn't know where he's going to be every time.
Well, Curtis is not, he's not going to want me to read this 781 text, but
Oh, no.
I mean, I can if you want. If you're,
it's, after all, it is your show.
I'll read it verbatim on the Subaru of New England text line, which is 37937. Curtis won't admit it, but Bill finds a way to win that football game for you yesterday.
Please say verbatim.
When was that? What? Show me the game. What game does he win?
Didn't they lose like four of those last year?
Yeah, you mean the one against the Packers where Bailey Zappe relieved Mac Jones? He went into that game. You had the ball at the plus 45 on 4th and 3. One first down, you win at Lambeau Field against Aaron Rodgers. You punt it to Aaron Rodgers. He goes down the field and wins. The best part about those that have cited yesterday as an example of how you miss Bill Belichick was how many of those games they've lost over the last 4 years. And if you want to say, and it's a fair point, Greg, that Mayo didn't do any better, absolutely. This is not a day to celebrate Jerod Mayo. This is not a day to say moral victory. Not a moral victory. That was a bad loss at home in a game you should have won. You were conservative the whole game, 3rd and 5 on the 21-yard line, and you drop back and take a sack in overtime. Not a good play.
Bill's not able at the end of the fourth. He's not able to reach into his bag of tricks and come up with something to win that game in overtime.
The only thing in Bill's bag of tricks the last 4 years was the letter L.
Well, I think the only thing that it wouldn't be Bill, but it would have been Josh McDaniels. Does Josh McDaniels come up with something when you get the ball in overtime to lead you down the field, right? That's more of a Josh McDaniels or an offensive coordinator thing. I think when you start to look at yesterday's game, this is what we saw last year. And Bill even said it on this station. We were in every game. There was like, remember he come on in and said, yeah, we lost a bunch of games where we would by 7 or less. So that's what we're seeing again this year. Or at least, you know, this week. We saw a team that can run the football, play good defense, don't make many mistakes. Quarterback didn't make many mistakes, so I'm not putting the game on him for losing. But the quarterback is the one area where we go, we have a little bit of hesitation. Whether or let's if you don't want to say quarterback, you want to say our passing game. We're a little bit hesitant there. But you're always going to be in games because of what you're able to do in other areas of the football game. Defense, special teams, your ability to run the football. But Greg, now it's the passing game.
Can I throw something out there for maybe later on, maybe next, whenever you want to do it? But Steve Buckley has a column today calling out not the players, not Jerod Mayo, not Robert Kraft, not Elliott Wolf, the fans. He noted some things. Obviously, I wasn't there.
Yeah.
But he notes some things about the massive spots of empty seats inside Gillette Stadium yesterday and how the fan base was not at all energized supporting the team when they were making their home opener. He was shocked by it.
Really?
I'm just reading it right now.
All right, well, why don't we get to that coming up?
Yeah, and if anybody was there, I'd love to hear if that was their experience.
617-779-7937 is the number. What was the experience like yesterday at Gillette? Patriots lose the home opener. We'll talk to Jerod Mayo about it. He said post-game, this one hurts. And so we'll get to talk to Jerod Mayo about that coming up in about 20 minutes at 9 on a Patriots Monday here at WEEI. Well, it is a Patriots Monday, maybe a moral victory Monday if you subscribe to that. We're at Gillette Stadium and Jerod Mayo will join us here in about 10 minutes after a disappointing loss, week 2, for the New England Patriots. And tomorrow on this show, Ty Law on a Ty Tuesday, and then Wednesday, because it is a short week, we will talk to Jelani Tavai on the show Wednesday morning. This is Bob from Foxborough. Bob, what's up?
Good morning. How are you guys?
Great. How are you?
I'm good. I wanted to ask two questions, I guess. Did anybody watch the Fox telecast yesterday between the third and fourth quarter and notice the score that the station put up? Because it showed the Seattle Seahawks and it showed the Patriots logo with the Giants name.
Oh, I didn't see that.
No,
I did not see that.
Disrespect. Secondly, if we're looking at how the Patriots are setting up their team, it typically takes 5 to 6 games to get your identity, It's only the second game that they're trying to do a running game. We need to give them a little time. Can you answer that one?
Yeah, no, listen, I came up earlier this morning. I don't know if it was when we were talking to Boomer or before it, and I think Curtis pointed out that, or maybe it was Wiggy, that, you know, the first four games of the NFL season are preseason. So I gotcha, but this is one that you should have and could have won.
Right.
And you let that get away from you early in the season, which is too bad.
And so. Curtis is right. I think a victory, moral victory is when you lose to a team that's far better than you and it's close and you have an opportunity to win. I think this is more of like, going into this, we all felt like, at least here locally, I know Vegas looked at it differently, we all felt like, okay, this is a game they should win. So I don't think you kind of take moral victory out of that, because that's a game you should have won.
Can I explain why I think it's a moral victory Monday? Mm-hmm. And you can call me an idiot all you want, but I think then watching the Chiefs-Bengals game and being like, the Bengals are giving the Chiefs a run for their money, and knowing the way in which the Patriots played them. And I know you're never supposed to do that. You're never supposed to say A plus B equals C. But looking at that and the outcome of yesterday, and the Bengals lost, but barely, and the fact that they got this game to overtime, I'm like, all right, that's a bad loss today, but it seems like it was a good win last week. So to balance it out, and this could be me just looking at things with rose-colored glasses and me trying to be positive on a Monday, but I don't know. That could be a dumb take for me to take into account the way the Bengals played the Chiefs, and that's why I feel so good this morning. But
who do you think was going to win this game before it played? Seattle or New England?
Before week one?
No. Like before the game was
played.
I thought
it was a toss-up. Before
last Monday. Oh, so last Monday you would have said.
Yeah, I wasn't confident that the Pats would win it. It kind of played out exactly like I thought it would.
Oh, okay. Because I thought most of us would have picked Seattle to win the game. I mean, excuse me, New England to win the game.
Yeah, I think we, most of us, Courtney maybe did not. But the other thing I may have played a role in this, which is Greg's side of the street, if you want to talk about the prior coach, there's a chance a young team read their press clippings that, you know, you beat the Bengals in week one. Last week was a basic round of applause from everyone. Nobody, I mean, rightfully so, there was nothing to critique. There was a lot of positive press. And then entering week two against the Seahawks, you're coming home against a team that we don't believe is as talented as the one you just beat on the road. Maybe you come back to reality. But the thing with that is you started with a lead.
I didn't feel that way. I felt more like, and I felt it in the moment, that when Gerard Mayo was sitting here last week, right next to me and Wiggy, and said, listen, we are going to be a run football team, and you got to try to stop us.
Right.
And then if you do stop us, we got, you know, something up our sleeve. There was nothing up the sleeve.
Like, see, that's the difference. That's the difference.
Once they stop the run,
right?
You have nothing else right now.
Right.
How much do you think of the we haven't talked about it yet, but the Evan Washburn report that 30% of the weekly snaps are up with the first team are going to Drake May, despite the fact that
the virtual snaps, or are they
both?
Okay.
But I would say the fact that that's ongoing, if from my perspective, is that showing Gerard Mayo says the only way we elevate this offense to another level is with Drake May as the quarterback.
Yeah,
that's what's up the sleeve.
And Greg, you're right. Like Mayo saying we're going to be a run first team. Okay, we understand that's like, that's fine. We all agree with that. Like, that's probably where your best players are. But you're right. It's like, all right. Now, and if the run worked for you well, but now it's like, okay, first down you run, you don't get nothing. Second down, maybe you try to run. Now it's third and eight, third and nine. What are you after that? Or what are you when the other team says, all right, we're loading the box. We're not going to let you run. That's what I think you're spot on. It's like, all right, the up the sleeve, there's nothing up there. And it's just like, why is that? Is that, which I don't agree, I don't believe it's the offensive coordinator not having those plays, because I think you've been in the league long enough. There's plenty of pushing the ball downfield plays. It's either you don't have confidence in the quarterback or you don't have confidence in the O-line.
Well, what do you think? And we can just ask him when he's here in 5 minutes. But what do you think Mayo meant post-game when he said we need to push the ball down the field more?
I think he meant we need to start calling some of those plays that are – you know, the pass routes are 10, 15, 20 yards downfield, not, you know, drag routes or crossing routes and hopefully somebody catches.
So that's an issue that he has with play calling.
Yeah, and you have those plays. Now it's why ain't you doing it? It can only be one of two reasons. You don't have confidence in the quarterback or you don't have confidence in the O-line.
And, right. Well, what about the wide receivers? I mean, you have confidence in Hunter Henry, clearly.
Right, but I think they have the confidence in the wide receivers because they were taking shots in you know, training camp, and you saw big plays and pushing the ball downfield. So I think you have the confidence in those young guys, but is the quarterback going to be able to put the ball there accurately, or is the O-line going to give him enough time to do that?
Yeah, and what is a ball down the field that is exciting? It looks like the fans are not excited, and I have a theory. So Steve Buckley has a story today saying that the fans, young fans, are not supporting the team, that ordinarily there's empty seats in the club seats, as the Greg Hill seats.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just the club seats. There were wide swaths of empty seats in the 300s. And my takeaway is, entering this season, the handling of the dismissal of Bill Belichick irked a lot of people. And I think while they still have season ticket holders and while they're still, you know, a wait list, whatever, I don't know what the way they describe it, but I do think that it was noticeable just watching the defense, you know, big plays. It didn't feel very loud. It saw they stood up a little bit. I mean, it's very jarring when you jump from a Patriots game to, like, the Chiefs-Bengals game. And
yeah.
You can feel the crowd through the speakers. It was kind of quiet.
Beautiful day, though.
Yeah.
And we don't have a lot of those left.
Nope.
Maybe it was.
But wouldn't you want to be at Gillette Stadium on a beautiful day?
Maybe there's some who would rather be out of doors.
I just think there's, like, no excitement.
Last day at the pool or something like that.
No, it's true.
But tough in this economy as well.
It really is.
I think it's just no excitement around the team. Like, there's no, like.
But there was after week one. It felt like there was.
But I think it was there was excitement for the win. But watching that game yesterday, did you feel like it was just like one of those boring, close games that if you.
Are we calling it boring if they win?
No.
Yes.
Oh, come on.
I don't think that game was boring.
If it's not New England.
Oh, right, of course.
But that's my point. If it's not New England.
Yeah, but we're talking about fans getting their butts in seats.
Right, but if it's not New England and it's just two teams that you're watching on, let's call it Cleveland and Jacksonville, aren't you going, all right, let me go watch the red zone?
Yeah.
Do I really want to go?
The product is not very entertaining.
There's not, like, a little bit of, like, ooh, I get to go see Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. All right, well, the head coach of the New England Patriots will join us next on a Patriots Monday at Gillette Stadium. Gerard Mayo coming right up.